Welcome to Mindful Social, the show that intersects mindfulness and emotional intelligence with the hectic online world we live in today. I've known Dr. Joel Bennett, this week's guest, since I enrolled in his Resilience and Thriving Facilitator training years ago. Since then, we've become friends, and his five-book collection, Quest for Presence, offers a deep look at our relationship with time, and he uses philosophy, poetry, science, and simple exercises to better understand this relationship with time and with ourselves. Have a listen to my chat with Joel. Joel, who creates a book called Quest for Presence and why?
Who, as in, like, the sound the owl makes?
Not where I was going.
Oh, you mean, like, who in terms of, like, who's on first?
This is what Joel's like, people. You're just going to have to get used to it. Where did it come from?
Where did it come from? God only knows. I really don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can give you the autobiographical literal version, but how boring is that?
Oh, that's no fun. No, no. I want to hear the how long has this been poking around in your head in little pieces, and then it started to come together and you went, oh, what am I going to do with this?
I never know what thread I'm going to pull, but in 1975, I was living in a communal home in Amherst, Massachusetts. And
as one does.
What a time. I was reading tarot cards on the University of Massachusetts campus at lunch while the students were coming. I had my Zafu and my little, you know, tapestry carpet. And I was like into this whole, like, you know, from a very long time ago, transcendental, you know, like, what are we really doing here? And at that time, and you can look them up on the internet, there was down the road, had a hitchhike, Elwood Babbitt. Mm-hmm. Elwood Babbitt was a channeler, a spiritual vessel for Dr. Fisher. Mm-hmm. So I hitchhiked and I had my session with Elwood, and he, you know, you get out your little cassette recorder and he taped the session, and he told me that your spirit came into this world too fast. You just were thrown in, you weren't ready. Here you are, you're gonna have to make do and just figure it out. But you know, all of these random forces, he said the color orange, you know, there was a strong orange aura around that. And so, you know, I didn't know that's what I was going to talk about right now, but it's a lot more interesting than, you know, any other narrative I'd give, especially anything that's like trauma informed, you know. It's like, so that was an important piece because we're spiritual beings in the human body.
Yeah.
And that sort of reinforced it. And, you know, I was 19 years old. And so immediately, if anyone's done any work on past life or ancestral patterns or soul weight, or even if you're really, like, you know, serious about 24andMe at a real serious spiritual level, you know that this incarnation is just that.
The incarnation.
This is it. This is the incarnation. So if you spend any time reflecting on the fact that you have human consciousness, pause right there, because that's a big leap. If you spend any time reflecting on the fact that you have human consciousness,
underline that. Yeah,
that's if anybody here is like, what did he just say? You know, then
on the wrong podcast.
Yes, you will. You have to come to the realization that your quote in English language, which is this can be interpreted and translated, your time here is limited.
Like Ram Dass said, it's the only dance there is.
Yes, and I have a picture of me and Ram Dass we could use if you want to post it on the thing. So, which happened after that. Anyway, so the thing, though, is that where did this come from? You know, if you ask anybody that question in anything that they're doing, if they say anything other than something like what I just said, then they're giving themselves too much credit.
So I don't know is sufficient?
Maybe not for your audience who may have already like, what that, what, you know, may already tuning off right now, you know? It's like,
that's okay.
We give ourselves so much credit for things that, you know, like I'm lucky to have this conversation with the Magi, Janet, Wand Weaver, Celestial. So for those of you who are listening, there's many sides to Janet. And the one that I love the most is the one where she just jumps into the cosmos with her magic wand. And she's not just a curator and interviewer of podcasts and curator. Janet has many, many, many levels of depth. And so I often feel like when I'm talking with you, it should not be an interview, you know, quote, should. I'm like, what's happening in your life, you know, around this topic?
Yeah. And we've done interviews before and we've worked together before.
Yeah.
And I really think that there's some kind of a, you spark something in me that makes me think differently. And I think that's one of the things that, going back to interviewer mode, I really enjoyed about reading the books, and at the same time was really torn because, okay, I've worked in technology for a very long time. I have a certain woo level that I push back against. And the more I learn about mindfulness, emotional intelligence, and the cosmos, the further that gets away. You know, it's like, I have learned to accept so much more than I would have 10 years ago, and to allow what is to be, because it really is. And I just didn't see it before. So that's my half-assed example. But I think it's really interesting. We were talking before the show started about people's perception of these books and the structure, and there's so much here. And the first time I picked it up, I went, okay, I'm not going to read this. This is too deep. It's going to be too close to my heart and it's going to be really hard. And then I went away for a weekend. I had no Wi-Fi, I had no TV, I had no excuse. And I picked up the book and I read it twice and really went through and dug into, what is this? And, oh, well, that really sparks something in me. And, oh, that does too. Well, that one takes me a little too deep. And I think for me, it was the exploration of the concepts in the book that turned some keys for me. There's still a lot more work to be done, but it turned some keys, and I like that. So I had to call you and have you be on the show because you're the one with the keys.
Yeah,
maybe not.
No, I'm the Wizard of Oz. The mask, you know, behind the curtain with no real substance. So, But no, let's. So you're talking about the Connoisseur of Time.
Yes, but I'm
So,
also talking about book
Quest for
one.
Presence. Yeah, book one, Quest for Presence. So
Yes.
yeah, let's talk about. So Connoisseur of Time. I'll throw out some of the ideas, and you can tell me if this relates to the key. One of the concepts, kind of like the introductory concept, is what is your current attitude toward time? That's the kind of like the rooting, universal, easy to understand. So some examples are, well, my life is just a treadmill. I'm just going from pillar to post. Another example would be, I don't really have time for the things that matter. That's another attitude toward time. Another one is, I can manage my time, maybe not, and get to do things. Another one is, I manage my time pretty well, and I set aside time for things that matter. But then there's other levels, which is where every day is an opportunity for me to bask in the preciousness of life and the time I have, which is a whole nother level than I'm managing my time. And then there's even higher levels, if you will, which is my life is unfolding. I can feel my destiny unfolding every day, and everything I do and my schedule is part of that. So we all have an attitude, an orientation for time, whether we're conscious of it or not. So the first concept, or the first tool, or the first exercise is, what is your attitude? Is your life dragging on? We
Are
know,
you ambivalent
yeah.
about time?
Are you ambivalent? Like, I do what I have to do to get by, but I'm glad I can get home and make my TV dinner, whatever it is, and then watch Netflix. That all of that implies, I make sure I get enough sleep, and I then go back and get back on the treadmill.
Boring.
Or whatever it is. I mean, everybody is in their own space with it. There's no judgment. It's just, that's the most important thing. No matter what your attitude is, we're not telling you you should be at a certain level. It's more just waking up to what your attitude is. So that's the one exercise. And then the other exercise, which we talked about a minute ago, we always do presence check-ins, right? I just did a conversation webinar last week. There were 150 people on there, and did a presence check-in. And
Define what a presence check-in is,
let's
please.
do it right now. Those of you who are listening, if you're still are listening, well, a one would be your, I'm going to give you two versions of it, actually several, because I've been playing with it. A one is like you're tuned out. You don't know what you're listening to. You know why you're here. You're distracted right now. You might be on a treadmill listening to this. You might be riding in your car, but you're really focused on something else, and I'm in the background, and maybe, yeah, you're a one, completely like not here. A 10 is like you're totally interested. What is this about? And you're engaged, and you're processing, and you're hanging on the breath, and you're wanting to know what's going to come next. That's one version. The other version that I've been using lately, which I just came up with this, a one is you're Dorothy who just woke up in Munchkin Land. And you're like, where am I? We're not in Kansas anymore. I don't know what's happening. Who, what are those slippers? I don't, what little pe, this is weird. That's a one, A 10 is like, you're there, you're throwing the Wizard of Oz under the bus for being a fake, and you've traveled all the way, and you're totally like, we've got to get this together here, people. That's a 10. Another version of a one is, as I mentioned, a one would be, did I put my pants on this morning? Right? And a 10 would be, not only got your pants on, you've got your sword and your shield and your whatever it is you're doing, and you're ready to fight the world. And so a presence check-in is one. So tell me right now, dear Magi, where are you on the scale of 1 to 10?
Thinking I'm about an eight.
You want to share
Just
more about what that is?
like where I think I live most of the time is more in the fours and fives. But there are certain people that when I talk to them, I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, there's something here to talk about. That's where presence comes from for me. I like people who are interesting, and that it's not just a, okay, I read page 7, and on page 7 you said, you know, that's just checked out and not interested at all. So yeah, maybe I'm a 7. Who knows? Somewhere in there.
So great. So thank you. So to go back to the question, you know,
which I've forgotten.
Well, what's the keys? You talked about, you know,
yes.
You think I hold the keys. There was something in the Connoisseur of Time or things in there that you read that sparked this. So for listeners, the first, if you will, intro to this is those two exercises. So and then you go from there to, okay, what is your current presence level? What is your current attitude toward time? But then where do you want to be? And that's what we call the threshold. So in any hero's journey, in any spiritual journey, there is, by definition, a threshold, because you're crossing over into a new path, a new space, a new adventure. And so I'll stop there. When you look at those three exercises, was there something in there from reading the book that you want to recall for people? Like,
I really think the second and third parts are really important to be like, you know, let me really go down. The list is fairly long, so you can relate to almost anything that's on the list in the book of where am I right now? And as you go through the list, your attitude towards it changes because they're written purposefully in the order that they are. So as you get towards the end, you're like, oh crap, what am I going to do about this? And then it's like, the next question is, where do you want to be? And then you can start to dream and you can open up and recognize the sense of lack that you had in the second lesson and be hopeful about being able to go there and to realize finally to actually step back and look and go, oh, okay, work to do. That's my perception of it. But I found it very intriguing, especially since I came at it from the standpoint of, oh, I got to do this book. I got to read this book and it's really going to be good for me. And I got to read this book, not wanting to read the book, and then getting into it. And it really helped me to see how much I needed that. And then you go on to the contemplations where you think about all of that. And then that draws it in deeper. So I like the structure. Which isn't something I usually like, but it really did kind of lead you down the path. And I think that sets you up for book one pretty well, the map.
Map. So hold on a second. You're going a little too fast. Hold on. So you did this while you were on retreat. Personal retreat. You
yes.
Set aside time. You really took the time and you gave yourself a lot of space to get into this. So I want to pause here because the other part to this, which I don't talk enough about on interviews, is what does it feel like to live in the gap between your current attitude and the threshold? And I spend a lot of time on that, or I encourage people to spend time on those feelings. And they include feelings that can range anywhere from curious to stuck to often yearning. I hear people talk about yearning to wistfulness to
regretful.
Regretful is one of them, right? Because once you start getting out of linear time and you just go into your feelings about your time, that's really where the work begins.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's like that study I talk about where they did this, you know, huge meta-analysis. I keep coming back to this study as a touch point of the relationship between time management. You know, this just came out a couple of years ago, 130 studies, 50,000 people, whatever it was. And they find that the relationship between time management practices, time management skills, and productivity is strong. The more people that practice time management, the more people develop time management skills, the more likely they have more efficient lives, more productive lives. But what surprised the researchers is what's even stronger is the relationship between time management and life satisfaction. Getting joy out of life. And the there's so many things to make out of that that have to do with the growth of time management practices and tools and books, which is a huge industry. In the 60s and 70s and moving forward now with apps. I mean, it's just gonzo. But people don't do time management at the deepest level, not the productivity business work level. They really are doing it not because they're trying to get work done, but because once you go into it, you realize there's more to life. Because as soon as you start thinking about time in a intentional way, it's like, who wants to spend all their time just scheduling business? I mean, really. I mean, maybe there are people listening to this who, like, already, if they are, they haven't gotten this far in the interview. They've already tuned out.
We don't need to worry about them.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, just tell me what I need to do.
Mm.
So I think the feelings are really important because that's where our life satisfaction comes from. And that's where our real, that's the basis of our biological consciousness, that we know if I feel wistful, if I feel poignance, if I feel preciousness, if I feel yearning, there's something about my life that is calling me to be present.
Mm-hmm. So, or we're tucking it away and pretending it's not there.
But that's what I'm thinking. That's what I wanted to ask you, is that as you were going through that exercise, do you remember what feelings have been surfacing around this work for yourself?
Yeah, I think that a lot of my time management up until the last couple of years has been really around, you know, running a digital marketing agency, got to get this done, other people's timelines, other people's constrictions on things. But now for me, it is more important for me to be able to see that I do have more time than I thought I did, you know, that there is more presence there. And that's something that has become very important to me, that I can say, okay, yeah, there are things that I'm lacking or that I felt that I deserve to have. And there are also things that I didn't even recognize that I did have because I was too busy scheduling and figuring things out. Productivity apps, by the way, do not work for me. Just because. Hate it. Hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it. I am not a structure person. So it really is, for me, being able to, now I have a lot more fluidity in how I schedule my time. I work differently. And it's been wonderful because I can say, you know what I need right now is to go for a walk. I need to clear my head. I need to solve a problem. I need to create something. And that's a choice instead of it's, you know, 3 o'clock, I got to go do this.
So let me ask you, if you, that fluidity, that sense of fluidity, that opening up to and owning that and that I heard deserve. What's the feeling that comes with that sense of fluidity and deserving them?
Joy. One of them.
Yeah.
Also a real sense of calmness, a sense of peace, rather than being driven by a ticking clock or a ticking time bomb. Either one. Make your choice.
Don't say that. So right there, right there is what this is all about. That if we give ourselves just enough time to contemplate about our time, you start opening up this well of true well-being. You know, that we there's not to discredit many of the great people you've interviewed, or you know, but there is a in our, but and we live in a very what we call praxis, you know, time, I use a time shaping, agency oriented world where we're always looking for the next application, book, gizmo, technique, tool. And there are all these self-help gurus that have, you know, it's an amazing economy that wasn't, that what did not exist before the 1950s very much, and started coming into being in the 60s and, you know, 70s just started kind of blossoming.
Gurus really became a thing.
Yeah, Wayne Dyer.
Yeah.
I think a linchpin, if you will, in that. And you mentioned Ram Dass, although that's a different angle. And I think I like to think we're on the cusp of the end of that. That people are starting to recognize that they don't need to have, they're all saying basically the same thing anyway. And not everybody's going to understand that, especially if you're new to this work or new to this path. And so one of the other, you asked me, how did this all start? Another revelation for me was the work of the transpersonal psychologists. And there was an old survey, it's still around, the Personal Orientation Inventory by Sjostrom. And taking the lead from Maslow and his understanding of the role of time perception and self-actualized people, and the idea of what he called being motivation, not deficiency motivation, and this concept of time competence. Now, there's a lot of work that's been done in this area, and we talk about it in our workshops, you know, different measures that have been used. But to me, the core idea there always goes back to the distinction that Maslow made between self-actualization, i.e. self-help, tools, techniques, books, gurus to help you, the distinction between self-actualization and self-transcendence. And self-actualization involves recruiting time, utilizing time, becoming efficient. Stephen Covey's 7 Habits, Sharpen Your Saw, all the different things that are out there to help you actualize your proficiency as a human being and being an excellent, you know, 7 Habits of Excellent People, or whatever, you know, Tony Robbins, you know, even Deepak Chopra, all of these people who talk about, you know, becoming more or less your best self. And we can talk about Eckhart Tolle too in this space, because it relates to this transition between self-actualization and self-transcendence, because now it's not about utilizing time, it's about transcending time. It's about the moment that you had that joy, where it's not about you have to do anything in order to prove something or to leave a legacy or to master something. You're at a point where, you know, there's timelessness is something I better get a sense of, because I'm going to die and it's going to go anyway. So if I'm so busy on the treadmill and all of a sudden I'm on my deathbed.
And you haven't had that joy.
And you haven't had that joy or any, there are many different colors and hues to the experience of timelessness. And I mentioned, you know, preciousness, adoration, you know, these are what we call the treasures, fulfillment, effortlessness, beauty, you know, that you start thinking, well, why am I even here? What am I doing here? And I like to believe that the proliferation of 1.5 million podcasts done by one's mother's, grandmother's, cousin's dog, I mean, there are podcasts all over the place. It's like, okay, maybe we should find a magic carpet or something else, you know, rather than all this, like, to do things. That's exciting to me. Mm-hmm. So your joy is really what I want to acknowledge, amplify, and like go with, and like, let's keep going. Let's do that more.
Yeah. Well, and that to me, you know, when you really settle into presence, and I think that came out in this book as well, that sense of, oh, I'm here is rare. It shouldn't be rare, but it is rare. And you know, my friend was gardening and she came in and she said, I had a meditation. I'm like, cool. I've been trying to get you to meditate for a long time. You're not meditating. Cool. And she said, I was just pulling weeds. And I just suddenly really saw that what I was doing was just being there weeding. And I didn't have to think of things. I wasn't planning on my next job. I wasn't doing any of those things. I was just there. Those are golden moments when we can stop and be with them. And for me, it's not about trying to hold on to those, because craving and clinging and all of those things are just not helpful to us. But to simply notice it and allow yourself to notice it for a moment and then go on to whatever it is that's next without fighting about it is kind of key to my resilience anyway.
Or it could be going on to the next golden moment.
Yeah. And the next. But you can't make them happen. You have to be there for them to happen, but you can't make them happen.
You know, it's interesting because when I listen to you in your podcast, I don't know if you saw, I posted how much I liked your stuff on LinkedIn the other
day. Did. Thank you.
And it's because this is kind of quality of really this curious prodding, but it's a gentle kind of approach to opening up, you know, the conversation. Uh-huh. And I'll just say, good Lord, we need more of that. I need more of that.
I think we all do. We don't get it. We don't get people aren't curious about each other because we don't give ourselves time to be curious. And I think that's, is that a time thing? Yeah, probably. It's a construct anyway.
Oh no, it is. So now I'm going to get into my head just a little. I know.
Go for it.
You want me to? So I wrote Time and Intimacy in 2002, And that was, you know, another piece. And in there, I talk about the relationship between time and intimacy. And the model is goes like this, sort of like a version of it. Because that's what we're talking about here now, with gentle probing, really giving each other time and having a conversation that, you know, you can listen to podcasts and you can distinguish between those podcasts where there really is intimacy developing in the course of the interview or conversation, mm-hmm. where, and you can tell when it's not. And if you really were to study that, and I'm not in any way suggesting that artificial intelligence should study that, since that's on everybody's mind, right? You start to realize that there are certain qualities of time or certain qualities of the interaction that catalyze a shift from it being just transactional, you know, what Edgar Schein and Humble Inquiry, they talk about level two relationship to more transformational, which is more of a level three relationship. And those qualities include things like willingness to interrupt and willingness to be interrupted. You know, at the very core, you know, it includes things like a sense of ongoingness, that there's some continuity. It's not just a series of non sequiturs, although mm-hmm. that can happen any moment with me. And there are other qualities like that that you can cultivate to foster more intimacy. And so I think there's something about the way you, I think, dialogue that in some ways, not to say that the content and the people you interview aren't important and very useful. You know, I especially like the Queen of Clarity, you know?
She was awesome.
She's awesome.
And disruption.
Yes. That
clarity is, and disruption. Very important combination.
There you go, right? That's exactly it. You know, you have to be willing to interrupt and be interrupted in order to have clarity. Mm-hmm. So, but also intimacy. So the point I'm making is it's not the content only, it's your style. It's one's style and manner of cultivating the back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that, I'll circle back around to kind of connect it. That relates, of course, to the four soulful qualities or capacities I talk about: acceptance, presence, flow, and synchronicity. But especially flow. It's like, if you are listening to this and you're having a conversation with somebody, whether it's your partner or someone at work, and you're experiencing this flow back and forth, then time tends to evaporate.
True.
And that's actually in the research, the Csikszentmihalyi research on flow, is that when you're in that conversation, and all of a sudden it's like, you didn't realize an hour and a half has gone by. So that's part of this also. That's the other part. So it's not in the book, it's in having the conversation and having a space where you can talk about these ideas and really be with another person. And that's what we do in our workshops. I mean, tonight, I've done workshops where it's over, like an hour and a half has gone by and people are like, they're still talking. I can't stop it because you enter into the flow state.
Yes. Yes. Oh, Joel, speaking of the flow state, I hate to end this call, but I want people to pay attention to how they can connect with you and, you know, start reading this and give themselves time, as I did, to be with it and not go, okay, I'm going to read the book. It's going to be done. I'm going to write a journal post on them, out of here. So that would be a waste of your time. Do it with some intent.
Gorilla time transcendence.
That's it. Voila, new book. Oh,
So
I
yes.
will.
So Presence Quest, do you want me to kind of go through the literal where they can find us or?
Yes, please. Yes, please
Okay,
do
so
that.
presencequest.life is the website, presencequest.life. We have a Facebook group that you can find through there. We have upcoming workshops that you can find through there. You can get access to the books, free worksheets. We have a couple coming. We have one, but we're just starting a new Patreon account because we can't, you know, hello,
this work, people.
There's work, people. So if you're willing to contribute to this cause, it's really about creating a community of time weavers in this precious weave of time, which we call this happening life. And we have our mandala, we have yantras, there's more coming, including podcasts like this. I'm hoping that you'll contribute to it, and we can talk more about how you can be a contributor.
It'll be fun.
So it's presencequest.live, and you can pretty much find stuff there too. Yeah.
Well, all that info will be in the blog post, and go check it out. Just trust me on this. Just go check it out and pay attention to Joel because he's pretty freaking interesting. So there. Thank you, Joel. Always a pleasure.
Yes, oh great magi.
You're killing me.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Mindful Social. It's been so great to see the subscriptions growing, and the feedback has really helped me make the show even better. So if you know somebody who needs to be on the show, email me at janet@janetfouts.com, and please send me feedback there too, or post a review on the podcast platform you're listening on. Oh, and do me a favor, share this show on social media or with a friend. Thank you.